you are listening to Let's Go JoJo, the weekly JoJo's Bizarre Adventure podcast from Dynamite in the Brain and Secret of the Sailor Madness. So come along and hang with the Let's Go gang. It's Dwayne.
Hello.
It's Niall.
Good day.
And it's me, Brian. And tonight's episode is Mirror Man and the Purple Smoke, or Man in the Mirror and Purple Haze.
As we can clearly hear them saying.
Yes.
Oh, now we're illegal.
I feel like I'm going to need you guys to help me out on this episode, because I got terribly confused.
I watched it a second time just now.
I think that's necessary, yeah.
And took some notes.
Dubious scientific principles at work.
Yeah. My penultimate line is, more snake bullshit.
It's not that he read up on the encyclopedia on every motherfucker, but boy howdy did he read about snakes. Like, it's just like, I really gotta get good at snakes. Snakes is gonna be like my main thing I'm gonna turn things into and from.
Yes. It is a bit like a D&D player who's using his,
summon an animal or something.
Outside of game knowledge. My knowledge of snakes. I'm gonna always apply summon snakes. And argue with the DM about what snakes can do.
Oh, this, like, JoJo's would be the worst campaign because the powers are such bullshit. Some are just cheap and other ones are just like, I just got a guy with a sword. That's all I got.
It depends what game you're playing. I think if you were using like the Marvel Saga rules, you could run a JoJo's campaign fairly well, because that's got a thing called power stunts. So you like have your basic power and then you can just attempt to do all sorts of bullshit things with that power and develop them as power stunts.
Yeah. I did, when one time me and Wayne played like a bit of Numenera, I was able to forge like a stand user out of the like, illusionist class.
I think he did a really good fucking job on that. I like fucking stand user out of the thing worked pretty good.
Yeah.
Because like one
of the basic spells is like, you know, I can have a, shoot like a force thing, but it says in the book it can take any form you wish to. It could be like a fireball or a hadouken or something like that. But I obviously said, well, when I use that spell, it's going to be my guy going, oh, no, 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 no.
It allows enough leeway to go like, okay, you got fire powers. So since you're like a sword guy, you want your sword to be on fire. It's like, yeah, cool. Or if you're like a psychic guy, your psychic attacks are fire tinged or something like that. So you just went like, you have a muscly dude kind of appear beside you. And it's just like, yeah, okay, that's fine. Your light based powers can do that.
Anyway, no one wants to hear about our elves. Let's get on.
Yeah, they do.
With the summary. We've got Fugo's trapped, Illugio's gloating, Abaccio has run away to get he finds the mosaic. But
he can hear him running away in the mirror.
Yes.
But so you can hear sound that's made outside in the mirror, but sound inside the mirror can't get outside of the mirror.
Well, to be fair, he gets confused himself halfway through the episode.
Illusio was like, I can decide what can enter into the mirror world. So if I want to decide that I want to hear the sound coming in, I can just decide that.
Right, yeah, I guess that's true. Yeah.
Yeah, unfortunately, as well as finding the mosaic, he finds a mirror. And then he figures out what's going on. There's somebody inside the mirror.
So has he just placed mirrors all around Pompeii, just guessing as to where they're going to be?
Well,
hit all the tourist traps, one of the fucking dog's mosaic, one of this fucking thing, yeah.
Well, the back here was at first going, that's a strange place to put a mirror. that's right. There's some guy with a mirror bis stand trying to murder us all. I forgot about that. Briefly.
Yeah.
And to be fair, then he tricks Illugio into taking his stand into the mirror world instead of him. Because apparently, as recreating the past, you could just have it appear as other people.
That's a kind of used power of this, like, king fucking Moody Blues, fucking just imitate me from like a second ago, and then that's enough to trick him into.
Yeah, like he goes over and leans by the key. I'll go over and lean by this thing, and it's like, okay, you just stay on pause over there, Moody Blues, as me.
Yeah.
While he hides behind the corner or something, I guess.
But you can also command it to beat people up, as we learn.
Yeah.
Like, that's a standard power.
Precise punches is like, you know, that comes as on all new models going forward.
Yeah. Now you've taken my stand in, now it can beat you up, and your stand's puny, it's a rubbish stand, very weak.
Well, it's that he says it's like, it's not weak, it's because it's using all its powers to bring you into the mirror world.
Yes. yeah, but Illusio's not done. He's got another trick up his sleeve. Because Abaccio is basically he's got his stand carrying a mirror, so Abaccio can gloat towards Illusio, which seems a foolish thing to do, because then Illusio just pulls his arm through that mirror he's carrying to speak through to him.
I think he's carrying a mirror in the real world, yes. So he can see what's happening, because he is the non-seeing through his own stand's eyes ability.
That's true, yes.
And your man carries a bit of mirror that he shattered earlier, which just gives him more stuff to work with. So he like works the angles so he can grab his arm through.
Yes, what's this? Yes. I bet you recognize it. It's your arm.
That's a real magician thing. It's like, what have I got in my pocket? Oh, your whole arm.
Yeah. And now I'm going to saw you in half and put the half together.
Yeah, pretty much.
So basically he drags half of Abaccio into the mirror world and then sends half of Moody Blues back into the real world. And so he's stuck, but then he's using attaches the half of the stand body to half of his real body in both locations.
Yeah, so he's brought one whole body through, but it's half the stand and half your man. Yeah.
Illusio's like, oh, I'm going to stab you in the mouth with this mirror and then grab the key. And then he seems to forget which world he's in and then realizes, oh, hang on, these numbers are back to front on this head. I'm still in the mirror world. Hang on, where's the key gone? Hang on, he should cut his own hand off.
Hang on, his hand is taking a walk around the fucking corner.
Yes.
What is this isn't a crazy diamond or anything like that. I thought, well, once the hand is cut off of either yourself, put off your stand as well, but now we're deciding if you cut off your own hand, then your stand's hand can just become disembodied and just run away, like the thing from Gannon's family. Okay.
Well, I guess we've established that stand damage equals person damage. So person damage equals stand damage. And since a stand is a psychic apparition, it can just float around as a hand.
I suppose.
When you sever your hand. That's the logic of this fucking thing. There's barely any.
Yeah, maybe some mirror of magic going on as well.
Maybe, yeah.
It could be, yeah, sure.
It could be as well, no one ever really taught to do that before, because you wouldn't really be attacking your own stand for any great advantage, but in certain cases, like this one, then maybe
that is true. And it works so well that later on in the episode, Illusio goes, hey, Abaccio managed to cut his own hand off, and he was fine.
Quit your whining.
Yeah, it seemed like a better idea. It's like, I didn't even know I could do that. Okay, fuck it.
Yeah. And so he's like, oh, I'm going to take that key to the third member of our gang, and he's going to take that key and he's going to run away. Hang on, why isn't Giorno run away?
I thought Giorno had a brilliant plan. I thought he turned your man's stand into him or something like that, or some weirdness. Because he was just standing there, doing a cool pose, holding the key. And I was like, surely he's not that stupid. And it's like, no, he's kind of just...
He's got an amazing plan. Yes.
Yeah, is it an amazing plan, or is it an incredibly fucking stupid plan, though?
Yeah, so Illusio's like, what am I going to do? Am I going to grab him in here and make him give me the key, or am I going to slit his throat? I'm going to slit his throat. So he drags him into the mirror world. And as soon as he drags him in, he knows Giorno's arm is bursting with the virus.
He's like, uh-oh.
Yeah, Giorno has purposely infected himself with the flesh-eating bacteria.
then we get a brief extra flashback for Abaccio, who's basically, he explains how ever since his partner died, he's been unable to feel anything except when powerful people tell him what to do.
Yeah, which includes chopping off his own hand. Is like, I'm bleeding out, but I'll crawl my way through.
Yes,
it's fine.
Do this for the boss.
It's for the boss, yes.
Mm.
And then he thinks that Giorno's a stupid brat for sacrificing himself to save him and Fugue.
Mm.
Apparently there's a 30-second window, which is a long 30 seconds.
Yeah, sure, 30 seconds. All right, whatever.
But that gives time, Lucio has time to think of a plan. He's going to separate him, return to the real world, and separate himself from the virus by cutting his hand off, the aforementioned.
Yeah, so since he can decide what goes in and out of the mirror, he's decided to not bring his hand infected with flesh-eating bacteria. I thought he was trying to bring me through, but take the bacteria and leave it there.
That's what I thought.
Yeah, you could do
but,
that.
I mean, at that stage, you can see some of the fucking bones of his hand, so it's probably just better off getting rid of the whole thing.
Yeah, the return of Black Shadow censoring this episode.
Oh, yeah.
It was necessary, I think. Like, they had to shadow out his whole fucking face at one point.
And then Giolo's like, Fugo's like, oh, it's terrible, he's got away. But Giolo's like, no, you should attack him now with your stand. And he's like, I can't. Ah, but I turned a brick into a snake. You can.
Like, I thought they were just going to use the mirror to go, like, if we just hold up the mirror, we can see where he is, and then you can make your stand walk over there. It's like, no, no, I've come up with something more complicated. Don't worry about it. See that moving brick? That's a snake.
Because snakes are naturally attracted to mafia assassins, so it'll tell you where Iluso is. You can punch him up.
So, like, I based off Giorno's powers, which are still vague as fuck, can he kind of command the thing he knows? Like he said, he made the snake go for the bread roll in the last thing. At least he has control over snakes to some degree. As to their natural inclinations. So it's like, I know snakes like heat, so I've told this brick snake to go to the nearest heat source, which is you.
Yes, because there's only stands again at that point, and half of Abaccio's further away. So presumably stands don't give off heat. Yeah, so we know snakes like bread rolls and heat. That's what we've learned. And we learned some more stuff towards the end. So he's like, oh shit, I've been infected. There's that great shot of purple haze just looming over it, over Illusio.
Yeah, and him barely managing to block the punch, but the pod just pops right out. It's like, oh fuck, I didn't know this just come off.
And then there's that amazing finishing blow animation. I think that's the best thing in the show so far.
There's there's a whole like one sequence here. Like it was just like, fuck the virus, I gotta get away because if he punches me, like, you know, with that I'm fucking dead, I'm gonna be consumed by the virus. Oh, but there's a little bit of mirror there, but in this reaching that escape and it'll be just fine. While he's doing all that, he doesn't realize that Purple Haze just kind of launch those characters off his fist and just kind of pop off and fly through the air, and he gets one straight in the face, full force.
Yeah, it's it takes less time than 30 seconds for him, I guess, because he takes a direct fucking hit.
Yeah.
Yep, and he gets punched as well into a mush.
Punched into slime, like your man from fucking RoboCop, except without the hair. that's kind of what I was getting from it. I was like, oh, that's nasty.
Yeah, so now he's dead. Giorno and Illusio, Giorno and Fugo are back in the real world. They look at the dustbin to reassure themselves that they are back in the real world.
And he checks his watch.
Yes.
Yeah.
But they'll know Giorno's still infected. But don't worry, he's thought about this. Because that brick was inside the haze. And so when he turned it into a snake, the snake was born inside the poison, inside the bacteria, and so therefore he's immune to
the
virus.
So the brick was immune to the poison, and out of that brick came a stone snake that was born immune to the virus?
Yes.
Therefore, that snake has the antibodies for the flesh-eating bacteria.
That's correct, yes.
This therefore, brick's DNA.
See, the part of it that really bugged me, right, is because I thought he was going to, like, turn the snake into a different inanimate object, in which case this would be an antidote, like a fucking syringe full of antidote.
Yes.
No.
Just punch the blood straight into me. That'll do.
No, see, he can't turn.
That's true.
He can't turn a living thing into an abrupt. You can turn an abrupt into a living thing and then back again. You can't, like, would say turn it. You can't say turn a brick into a snake and then turn the snake back into a different thing. It would have to turn back into the brick, which it originally was. You can't.
Okay, I thought he was basically like a back and forth to animals version of what's your man's name from DC? Firestorm or something?
Yeah.
He can turn anything into anything else, but like chemically, not like animals and shit.
No, but this is basically this is Doug's plan from Doug and Double Decker, but it's real. It's not just a line of bullshit.
Yeah, I guess that's true. shit.
Yeah, that he's writhing on the floor but recovering from.
Was your man impressed that not that this was his plan, but that this was his plan he met up right now?
Yes.
Like, that he hadn't this plan. It's just like, I just fucking turned a brick into a snake just to fucking see if that would work, and I'm managing to use it twice. So that works out for me.
Yeah.
And he's just like, I respect you now, Giorno. You respect him.
Hey, you rescued her.
Yeah. I know, but like in the craziest way possible. Like standard JoJo, I guess, yeah.
Yeah, but that's it, because Abaki would think, no, take it rationally. We gotta do it this way. Well, we had to get the key back at all costs. So if this is a suicide mission, then that's fine, because it's all for the boss, it's all for the cause of doing that. Or to the point where I won't consider other options, no matter how crazy they might be. So until you get this upstart too, who is crazy and does think of the other options, and now he has shown me a different way that I can be useful to Bruno and the gang.
Yeah, and that, of course, Fugo and Abaccio are unaware of Giorno and Bruno's real motivations, and so therefore it makes sense. Giorno's plan makes sense from their point of view, is that they want to keep the gang alive because they'll need them when they finally get around to being able to convince them, oh yeah, this boss we're helping out, we're going to take him down.
Mm.
Like, I feel like they'd be cool if their boss turned to them and said, it's like, yeah, we're going to take down the main boss because I don't like all the drugs and shit. Because they support him 100%, so why wouldn't they?
Yeah,
it is.
Yeah, they're still questioning him recruiting Giorno, though, so.
Yeah.
But Giorno's too crazy to fucking, like, not succeed. I think is basically it, yeah.
I think as well, especially in the Bakio's case, I thought like a common theme was when Bruno's recruiting other guys, it's just he sees something in them, or they're down to luck, or a dead story, and say, no, one, make something of yourself, survive and thrive and live, whether it be under my employer or otherwise, but don't give up on your life so soon. I think that's what he's trying to instill in them, to think, wouldn't Bruno be even more disappointed and sad if they did just throw their lives away, whether it's for the gang or him or whoever. So it's kind of confusing that Abaccio would forget his formative experience in
I think he's interpreted
life
it differently. Yeah, yeah. He's so just true. Like, I just need someone to tell me what to do because I don't fucking care about anything anymore. So
yeah, I think you're right there, Dwayne. I think Bruno's feelings towards the members of the gang aren't necessarily understood by the members of the gang in the way that he intends them to be.
Mm.
As to if those are going to change over the course of it now, I assume that's going to be one of the arcs going through.
Yeah.
So did you enjoy Purple Haze?
I did. This was the best episode yet.
This was batshit crazy, and I had to think about it for ages, and I think I understand it, but I still question it.
Well, good, because you're never going to see that stand ever.
Yeah.
I guess it's too kind of good. It's like, hey, do you want to use flesh-eating bacteria to win everything? It's like, yeah.
And then after the credits, there was a little scene with another member of the Hitman team, I assume. Killing
doing somebody. Something that we don't understand out of context.
Yes,
yeah.
Train station.
Mm.
And that was JoJo's Bizarre Adventure for this week. It was excellent. It was, as I say, the best one yet.
I feel like this show's kind of been a slow burn to get fucking going, but the sheer fucking madness has ramped right the fuck up, and I love it.
Yeah.
Then it's time for all the other stuff we've watched in the last fortnight as we go within a podcast. It's Let's Go! And we start with, let me find my listy here, Golden Kamuy, I think. I think I've missed something off this list. Space Battleship Tiramisu, that's the thing I've missed off my list.
Usually be start with that.
Yes, episode 13, Battle of the Hecaton Heres Part 2.
They managed to say it so quickly, I kind of forget how long the fucking word is.
Or basically, Charles counterattack the parody.
Yes.
Will they prevent the divorce court from being invaded?
Yeah. But it's much more expressly it's clearly it this week, once everyone starts pushing against the Doomsday weapon.
There was a lot of good in this one.
And Subaru was like, oh, they're all struggling so hard, but I have found the hidden weakness of the giant, destructive Doomsday weapon. But they're all fighting so hard, it would be really bad to spoil a moment of them all their fervent desire to survive and beat this thing if I just hit the weak spot. And it's basically there's like a gamepad attached to Alice's for some reason.
There's a fucking NES controller, a player 2 NES controller that manually input, and the fucking manual as to how to work the thing right beside it.
And the outside of the hull for some reason, and it's like, oh, I'll just like I'll just use this, but I'll pretend to be struggling around everybody else. So just so they're all, you know, don't be left out of the grand, like, victory you're going to achieve here, you know?
When your man was ringing him up and going like, come on, kid, you got to put your back into it. And he's like, I'm doing it. Rah,
yes.
Rah. And he's just, like, pressing left on the fucking D-pad. With his giant robot, obviously. So good.
Yeah, and so that's pushing away from Earth. But then Cadillac realizes what's happening, so he's going to take manual control, and he pulls out the player one control.
Ah, shit. So then it's a battle of wills, but there's a cheat code written into the manual.
Yeah.
Which will self-destruct it. And at this point, he's getting fed up with everybody's gung-ho nature. But he still doesn't want to upset them. So he just tells that the robot tells them that there's a secret weak point in this battleship, that if
we all fire on this point, yeah, it's its weak point. And actually, I love the fact that it explodes slightly off that.
I know, that was
that was beautiful. Nobody fucking noticed, but it was just like, wait a minute.
We did good. Yay.
We must have exploded something, because it exploded very near where we were shooting.
Yeah, we're totally heroes.
Oh, that was great. And the narrator kind of going like, yes, he's learned some modicum of social norms and shit by not messing with everyone's fucking feelings about this cool climactic battle to the divorce court. Yeah, it was really solid. And I loved it, the coda of your man as well. It's just kind of like, is this the end of my marriage? He just got a fine, I think, in the end, wasn't it, for not showing up?
Yeah, you show up to the court mandated, what do they call it?
Appointment.
Yeah.
So he just got a huge fine.
Yeah, it was like, oh no, I think his wife took out a lawsuit against him. I think
that was it. Yeah.
But he's still got Lambda, so if it comes back for a third series, they're still characters. They did survive. And then, yeah, Suzu says, well, it's great working with you, brother, but remember, this was a one-off. Next time we meet, we'll be enemies. And they head off, and he gets halfway home and realizes, where's my eye thing? And he turns out he left it behind again.
Gonna have to order a new one.
So Subaru, losing those.
Yeah, Subaru runs off to give it to him, and we get Finn. Yeah, what a great series.
I would love more, but yeah, I mean, like, it's basically like super solid for what it is.
Yeah, it can stop here, and it's a nice solid 26 episodes and some slightly weaker extra episodes. But
I feel like the strength of it like comes through anyway. So
yeah.
Well, as long as there is giant robots and space things to make
take
fun
the piss out of, yeah,
then I'm happy to have more of this to fulfill that function.
Okay, then we got Golden Kamuy, episode 24. Call out. In which everybody swaps sides.
Some of them twice an episode, I think. Nearly.
Change dance partners, everybody. Yeah, and the one guy, I still don't know whose side he's on.
Yeah. Yep. There was way too much, everybody going to be at the gate. Hey, what are you doing here? Oh, I'm here waiting for so-and-so. Oh, I better go run up and find so-and-so and say, and then they keep...
Yeah,
going to the gate, to the and running plan. Away from the gate, and then coming back to the main gate, and then running away
like,
again.
Stick
to
in a group.
Else.
It's like, okay, if we all run away from the gate, let's all run away from the gate or something, you know, anything. But no, they all just keep, like you say, fucking changing places.
I think the best stuff is the stuff with Hijikata and the Warden, because that kind of wraps up the Warden's story as he dies in this episode. But he also like explains all his motivations about what he's been doing. It's nothing to do with the gold. It's basically getting Hijikata to admit defeat and agree to join the Meiji Restoration government.
Yeah, he basically wants to destroy him as a person for what he did to the Warden feels he did to him. But it's kind of like the summation of his story. And even Hijikata ends up with like more information that he was drawing together. Just to make the prison a target for him.
Yes.
And just like, oh, brilliant, new stuff. That's for me.
Puts well, in pocket, basically. I mean, new stuff, but also we've lost all the stuff we have.
They're starting from scratch, but they have some new shit to work with. So.
So we left Sugimoto meeting Noparabu, who confirms that he is Usurper's father when he recognizes
I'll carry a knife.
That's the thing.
He refuses to like go with Sugimoto. It's like, bring my daughter to me, but he's kind of like, he does want to insist. It's like, okay, like I didn't, because Sugimoto, like he can see from Sugimoto, so it's like that he's, what does he say? Like, you've been really taken in with my daughter kind of thing. Cause Sugimoto has this speech where he's saying like, she shouldn't be this, he kind of sees that Naparabu, or whatever you want to call him, was trying to build her up as like a weapon, essentially.
Yeah, but that's before he's like explaining that I think that's Wilk explaining that to Sugimoto after Sugimoto is saying, I don't think I want her to think that her father is a man who murdered a load of people for gold.
And Sugimoto agrees with him. Like, it's like, I understand that you need someone to be the fucking spark for this revolution and shit, but does it have to be her? Can she just, like, you know, eat animal brains in the woods innocently? I think was his line. Mm. And it's kind of like, it's really nice, like, that you can see it's like, I care for her as a person, where you kind of seem to just care for her as
a tool.
Yeah, as a weapon or a tool to fulfill this desire of his, yeah.
Yeah, because you get the feeling from the conversation is that, yeah, the reason... Well, we learned by the end that the gold was originally stolen by Kiraranki and Wilk to give to their revolutionary comrades. But then Wilk's obviously decided that he wants to give it to the Ainu to fund, but as not, I mean, it was already theirs, but specifically to fund an uprising.
Yeah, I'm going to use this for a revolution, but an Ainu revolution. He just kind of changed the direction of the revolution, I suppose.
Yeah, but he notices Inkarma up on the roof and recognizes the clothes she's wearing.
Yeah.
And then Inkarma spots him and calls Usurpa up, and they look at each other with binoculars, and Sugimoto's asking him how she's reacting to seeing him, and then he gets shot in the head.
Mm. Yeah, he gets shot in the head after he says, like, okay, you just have to let her know, I didn't kill the Ainu, and then shot. You know, he gets that much information out and nothing else.
Yeah.
But then everyone's like, kill Sugimoto, because they had a conversation, so we don't know how much he fucking knows.
Yeah.
And as soon as he got shot, I was like, I know exactly who the fuck shot him.
Oh, yeah. Fucking who have we not seen for all that episode?
Who's the sniper who's a prick who would do that?
Who's a sociopathic killer we all know and love? Oh, look at him up there in the Gate of Gata. He always slick the hair back. Oh, yes. Now it's time to put my plan into action.
When Sugimoto got shot in the head as well straight after, I was like, I mean, like, that's just going to take him down. That's not going to take him out. I didn't know that much. I was just like, yeah, he'll be fine.
Well, yes, Ogata does say, should have gone a little to the left. And
Sugimoto did use his body as a,
Tanigaki's meanwhile has offered to go and rescue Sugimoto. And which then leaves Inkarmat and Kiraranki and Shirayashi and Usurpa together. And then when they come back, they find that Inkarmat's been stabbed.
With your man's knife.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
There we go.
Like, when I saw that first, I knew that she basically held on to it, but to see that then kind of that scene play out where... And it was like an accidental stabbing, but it's still a fucking stabbing. And she's holding the knife into herself as evidence. And I was just like, oh my God, that's fucking horrible.
Yeah, but that's good in her part though.
That's going to save a lot of people a lot of fucking hassle from knowing who fucking did it.
There's already lost suspicion around her own motivations as well. So just to hang on to that makes it clear. Yeah, fucking, it was obviously Kira ranking. Who else had a knife like this?
Yeah. Well, specifically, the only other person with a knife like that is Sugimoto, because he has...
a surface, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, and Shirayashi and Usurpa have already been sent to the boat at this point, so they don't know this is happening. And this is all seen later after Tsurumi's quote-unquote rescued them. So by this point, Tsurumi's got Sugimoto, Tanigaki, Inkarmat, and the Hannibal Lecter who's very out of Alexa.
Oh, Ienaga.
Yeah.
Ienaga.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, like, she does the kind of fucking thing after talking about eating brains.
Eating people's brains in front of them while they're still alive, which is
like great. That's in the sequel.
Yes.
Where's Ushiyama then?
Ushiyama is it in the cellar of the chapel with
He's hiding
Hijikata,
out with the
that's right.
Tony Anji and your other fella from the prison. He was Hijikata's spy.
Yeah, they're basically been told to like lay the fuck low for a bit.
That's
Yeah.
Because their plan went completely tits up, but in the base they found a whole other store of intelligence they can use to further their aim. That was it. Yeah.
They're starting from scratch. They have no skins left, but they have a lot of information.
The warden, who they think has been killed, has actually just murdered a shit ton of the 7th Division.
I fucking love that. It was just himself. And you're one, the Hannibal Lecter doctor. So it was like, oh shit, we haven't seen him. Where is he? And he's just kind of coming out of the woods all bloodied and battered, but still fucking walking in the morning. Bodies. And I was like, fucking badass.
Yeah.
I was sweet. Yeah.
Well, yeah, I believe he's supposed to be like the best swordsman in Japan.
You forget, cause like, I think he's kind of the number two, but not quite.
Well, like Hijikata is the face and the symbol, and that's as well why the warden wanted to take him down, because as long as if people found out again that Hijikata is like still alive, he would still be like a symbol of resistance or uprising, and it would probably start all over again and plunge the country into civil war all over again. So,
but your man is the better sword
as well. Yeah,
that was a sweet fight for him, and I was glad, like, not that he gets closure on his thing, but it felt like a full. Like his story had kind of come to a close anyway, so it was fine for him to bow out then. It went out pretty badass too, so that was pretty cool. Mm.
So we've got one group heading east. They're going to be followed by Sugimoto, Tanigaki, Tsukushima, and Koito.
Mm. That's the new team.
The new team, yes.
Oh my god, fucking hell. And they're all of a sudden, they're with Tsurumi, and Tsurumi's just like, hey, so you're working with me now, cool. Yes. Hey, we're brain loss buddies.
Hey, same seas.
And there's a weird amount of comedy in this, like when a Serpent and her father are kind of like trying to figure out who is who by looking through binoculars, and has that flashback, and she's making the face when her dad's giving her a kiss for fighting off a bear, and like a little kid is like, I don't want to kiss dad, you stink, but then there's the emotional scene when you get back to the present. I was like, fucking hell, that's a hard hit. But in this, like, there's so much comedy bits where everyone's talking about, I ate your brain and now I have Sugimoto brain and I want to get a Serpa back, and Sugimoto's like, you ate some of my fucking brain, didn't you? There's loads of good jokes like that really, I think, are necessary after the amount of shit that went down.
Yeah, and it lightens the strange bedfellows you're left with.
Yeah, we're literally with the opposite side that we were just on.
Yeah, and Enogata's like, maybe I didn't manage to kill Sugimoto to Kira Anki. Just as we, which then leads into the scene where Sugimoto is like, I'm going to kill both of them.
Mm. Yeah. I don't know if Sugimoto's leg is just in a brace or if he actually lost that leg that Kaido shotgunned off.
I think it's like he's braced on the outside of his boot. So it's probably like a brace he has to wear around his leg.
Yeah. Maybe.
Yeah. I mean, like, just based off how many fucking holes are in the guy already. It's probably like, it's probably just a big chunk of flesh missing on that leg. So metal boot to help out. Yeah.
And Serp has a dream of Sugimoto, which he first think is a Kamui trying to communicate with her. And then Sugimoto, as he's flying off, comes back and goes, no, it's me, Sugimoto. I'm alive. I'm coming for you. And they grab each other's hands, and then she wakes up and she realizes she's holding Shirayashi's hand, for which Shirayashi gets hit.
What did I do?
Hey, Serpa, what's wrong? Did you have a bad dream? And she gets smacked for it. He's like, all right, used it at this stage.
Okay.
Shirayashi, I did like, he gets some good stuff as well. He saw the empty fucking scabbard of the knife, and he's like, oh, fuck, I know what's happened there. That's bad. We're with the bad people now, aren't we? Like, he realized straight away.
Yeah.
Mm.
And then, yeah, and then Hijikata's planning to go south, I believe, to find, like, the other criminals that the warden had tracked down already.
Yeah, he's done the tracking work for you, so you just have to do the legwork.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because he needs to make sure that they've got some of the skins, so Tsurumi can't get all of them and decode them.
Yeah, as long as you have one, like, basically he can complete the puzzle, so you're still in the game, basically.
Yep.
Still have some skin in the game.
And I'm wondering now as well, because as Noparobo must have passed down the minute of decoding those skins to somebody else, because obviously if only he knew, then we have no means of figuring it out now.
The suggestion, and what everyone fucking seems to think, is a serpent
knows inadvertently it's some sort of thing.
Based off how he's trained her, that she will be able to figure out the puzzle. Like she's possibly the only person who can figure out the puzzle.
It's like possibly once they're all together and she sees it, she'll know what it means.
It's significant to her and no one else.
Yeah, it was good. It was great. It's probably going to be a very long time before we get any more.
That is the only problem, because, what a fucking excellent ending and a shifting of everything, and just a really good show in general. But the only problem is, it's like, oh, man, I got to wait ages for more of this.
Yeah, you got to wait even longer to get the comic in English over here as well. Because
it's
way behind where this is in the TV show.
Ah, dang. That sucks.
Well, if you're desperate, if you're tempted by dark powers, you can find out for yourself. But I don't know. It's too hard these days.
That's good to say. Yeah.
Doing things the legal way is actually much easier now. Trying to I kind of enjoy how that's flipped around. No, it's I don't rob anything really anymore because it's not really necessary. Hard.
Yeah.
And I've got anime and manga on tap now, as much as I want for the rest of my life, probably.
Yeah. So the only thing I've been reading scanlated of late is the one thing where I need it to understand what's supposed to be going on in the cartoon we're watching.
Might be a good reason to drop it so you don't have to do anything illegal.
That is true. Before we get to that, we've got to talk about Thunderbolt Fantasy Sword Seekers 2, episode 13, A Bizarre Bloodstained Ballad.
Yeah, big fight at the end. Because poor hunting fox for his troubles. You know, he meets up with Lo Shinkai, the monk with the demonic talking sword, and tries to kind of goad him or kind of coax him into fighting Shang Buhan, which he was going to do anyway. I forget what exactly it was, but he just kind of didn't like his attitude so much. So. Sure enough, when the rest of the gang show up on that same road later on, they see his corpse strung up in the trees with a note saying, Shang Buhan, I'm a calling you out. You come to the Demon Spine Mountains after school or you're dead. That guy had a hard go of it. He was an absolute dickhead, but oh well. So I think, shit, okay, we gotta fucking try to strike down and fight him off, and we have the little dealy for putting the sword back in the scroll. Like, it converts the sword back into like magic ink, so you can kind of draw it back in or write it back into the scroll. So it's kind of like corner him and hold him down, and then we can I can do the whole routine to get that back in there. But how are we going to fight the guy? Because obviously, you know, from his sword can ensorcel you to do, you know, try and claim it for yourself. So you gotta try and fight it without looking at it. We got a plan right there, though. So they go, and then Shang Buhan shows up, and they're gonna fight him off then. And he's having difficulty at first, but they have a plan, because Lin Setsu comes up in the background, and he has the other magical sword, the Knight of Mourning, which, as you may know, it turns people into, like, mind-control zombie things. So what he does, he turns Shang Buhan into a mind control zombie thing, and it's just Lin Setsu is controlling him with all his like strength and abilities and muscle memory, but he can't be counter brainwashed by the Seven Blasphemous Deaths.
Because he's a zombie.
He's already brainwashed, you can't brainwash on top of brainwashing. It's just they cancel each other out.
Right.
So you can fight him.
No backseats, right.
Yeah. Then they kind of get him into a corner, and Ling and Lang, the fun rock man and his talking guitar show up, and just kind of hold him down there while Shang Buhan does the business of trying to seal the sword in. And you almost get there, but Lo Shinkai, he leaps into the magical aura, and he falls with the sword into a bomb of Savine because, oh, my princess, I will not see you go back into that scroll. Maybe we should get together in death.
That relationship really did not work out for her, did it?
That's what they all say. That's pretty fucked up right there. What is going on with that? I've seen some weird stuff in my time, but is that thing going to be alright down there? Yeah, it'll probably be grand. It's fell into this ravine and Bomb's Gorge. It probably won't become up out there at all. So I'm grand. Shang Buhan to typically be in. Not worth my job. It's probably going to be fine. So they sit that back in, and it's all the world. You know, we didn't quite get it back to where it should have been. There's a lot of people got killed along the way. But maybe now it'll be okay. Until Princess of Cruelty's bosses, her boss over in where it is, they in their fucking Evangelion Sele monoliths in a cave somewhere saying, ah, the Princess of Cruelty, she has failed us for the last time, or whatever like that. It seems like the fighters and such in this country are far too strong for her to tackle alone. Looks like we'll have to get involved. But maybe we should go some backup. Maybe we should bring in somebody who knows how to deal with these guys. I can help you out there. Who is that? Why, it's me, of course. The Knight's Lament, the demon necromancer lady from the previous season who was seemingly banished to hell. I also have a grudge against these guys. Now I'm going to come here with all my demon buddies to come fight them. And then an alliance is formed. So, of course, Shang Buhan, he thinks he's going to solve one problem, but it's only caught the attention of even worse people who are going to come along next season, which like his ass as well. And he's like, all he Shang Buhan wants is a quiet life, but he gets to deal with this shit. Damn his talent for collecting and sealing magical cursed swords.
dear.
Excuse me. What are there? Yep. It's a fun old thing. I meant to read into this a lot more and to get a better read in it over the course of the series. So that, but you get, if you get a sense of it when you look back at the thing overall, where it's like a sort of Gennaro Rabuchi and his mates making up their different D&D characters that they've put into a series. Because there are just like so many little things in there. It seems like, let's pull that stunt with, we have a sword that'll brainwash you, so you can't brainwash on top of the brainwashing. That's just thinking outside the box.
Yeah.
So that's a little bit of, and also, the voice actor, for what, if you kind of bespectacle has for Lang, the rock guy, the rock and roll guy, not the guitar. That's actually TM Revolution, who Gennaro Rabuchi is good mates with. And I think from what I've understand that they've played like tabletop role playing things together. I've got like a guy who's like, you know, he's holding Izzy Will's the biwa, and he can do like kind of strum it and do kind of magical sound wave stuff. Also, the biwa turns into a sword. Also, the biwa talks.
I've got a bard character with an enchanted fucking guitar. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, this is my original character. Do not steal. Okay, well, how about like I will write up a guy in my kung fu film Taiwanese traditional puppetry show was all this like. Crazy stuff learned on top of it. How about you write that guy in and you can come in and voice him? And also, we'll like us playing, our tabletop game at the weekends, but on live on TV. It's like, oh yeah, that sounds great. Let's do that.
I gotta catch up on that show. It sounds great.
Yeah, it's fun stuff. As mentioned before, I was kind of, enjoying how it was, having a little kind of conversation with the archetypes that some of these characters kind of fall into and how they kind of break out of those roles and, you know, kind of step outside the box, or they get questioned outright as if, why do you do the thing you do? Because you're a bad guy? Because someone told you you're a bad guy? Like, what do you want to do? What best seem to do? Like it did the kind of Princess of Cruelty, who became a much more, like, after being told, you know, she's like, you know, one of the most treacherous villains of all time, to like poison him with scorpions and do all this kind of underhanded stuff. But then, by the midpoint of the series, she's much more sympathetic character was being bossed around by a talking sword.
Yeah, she starts off coming from the main villain to, like, how is she going to get out of this situation? It sounds like when I was watching The Fucking Wire, and I was like, oh, geez, how's Stringer Bell going to get out of this situation? And it was just kind of like, yeah, you're kind of rooting for them, nearly, even though they're kind of dicks, but yeah.
Yeah. I get that as well a lot with Golden Kamuy, where it's like,
these
are bad guys, I kind of want to see how they manage this, how are they going to succeed in their evil scheme, you know, because they got a lot of odds against them, and this part of the plan doesn't directly affect the heroes who I love a little bit more. They're just trying to, you know, get one over on, like, a similarly or even worse villain than themselves, so I kind of am in their corner right now.
Speaking of, actually, I forgot to say, in Kamuy, I'm so glad a lot of the characters didn't die, because I'm like, I feel like there's more to do with these guys. It didn't just waste them like that. Yeah, and like you say, in this one, there's just more, it leaving them open, and the amount of fucking trouble he's caused and kicked up is just causing more trouble. I feel like that makes more interesting stories then.
Yeah, he's trying, like Shambuani, like, you know, he's a good guy, he's got the best of intentions, he wants to try and find a solution to this that hopefully involves the least amount of life lost or innocence endangered.
Yeah.
But as he gets called out for in this season, like, his merciful nature will be his undoing, and it was because he let Lo Shin Kai go, and he became an even worse bad guy than the ones they're already dealing with. But then he was kind of proven right in the end, because his methods then were help him overcome Hunter Fox. Lang was having a difficulty dealing with him, because, like, Lang is very steadfast and kind of rigid in his idea of justice and being a hero, whereas Shang Buhan is a bit more pragmatic, a bit more kind of flexible in his thinking. But you could argue then he also gets kind of sloppy, where he'll find a solution, which will work, but it may not be the proper way you should do it. And it leaves you kind of open up then for, as like, even worse villains to come along down the line, because it's just stirring up more and more shit. And as well, as it doesn't help that he's making a name for himself along with Lin Setsu. They can probably like Lin Setsu, you know, for all his kind of questioning motivations. He's literally just there, just kind of bored, just want to fuck around with guys and wind people up. That's all I'm here for. I have no greater end or ambition. I just want to, like, steal things because it's a laugh. a little bit, like Lupin, for example. So, yeah, looks like they're going to make, like, more of this probably. There might be another film, which I haven't even seen the first one, actually, which I must get around to. But he's the guy I never see, like, coming down the pipe at some point, and I look forward to it whenever it arrives.
Righty ho, next on the list is our old friend Karakuri Circus, episode 12, The Faceless Commander.
Ah, oh, jeez.
Hey, what's up?
So, like, they're walking down the stairs to hell made out of bones. Right.
Yes.
And this is after they've picked, like, we've got to split it into two teams because there's two doors, and apparently we have to do this because we just have to do everything we're told by these evil puppets.
Until we don't.
Until you fucking don't. So they get down to a murder room where it's like, all right, there's one door, only two of you can come through, so fight, go for it. And they're like, we don't want to fight, except for the one that does want to fight. In the meantime, the lads have explained, yes, I've got a fiance back home. Yes, I have a wife and kids back home. And I was like, oh, you guys are fucked. Why did you mention that?
Why?
But it was mentioning that so they could then have a death battle, but then they don't have a death battle. But then they escape anyway into the other death room and, like, yeah, we didn't have a death battle. We just had to fight a bunch of puppets. And it does all these twists and turns and shit before the first commercial break. And I was like, holy shit. I'm not feeling any of the emotional resonance you're going for, show.
Oh, well, yeah, because they cut all the emotional resonance out for time.
Yes! I know! Like, if that was, like, the mid-break, like, where I got to know these characters, and then there was, like, a break where it's like, oh my god, we have to fight to the death, and they barely make it out of that. But it's like, all of that before the first commercial break is crazy.
Yeah. No one's allowed any flashbacks or...
No time. I'll explain my flashback to you really quickly while we're walking through this hall.
Or establishing storylines.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the Ming Xia and Fatima and Lucille are in the pocket medical bay that Commander Faceless brought with him.
Is it like an inflatable hospital, it is, basically? Because it's never explained. It just suddenly appears, and I just assume from the look of it, it's inflatable or something.
And also, we also get George LaRoche and Ashihana arriving, and Ashihana contracts Xenopher, and so George has to give him some of his blood, which that has not been explained either. How that stops Xenopher, or why you shouldn't do it. He mentions that you shouldn't do it. In the comic, they've explained why you shouldn't do it, even before they get to the hospital, so that when you go to the hospital, you're not asking as a reader, why didn't they just give those children their blood? The reason is because if you drink the blood, you become upset, you get possessed by the thoughts of the alchemist.
Yeah, you're basically a Shirogane, and a Shirogane, you only give it to someone who wants to live for revenge.
Yeah, I don't get immortality or anything, but I think you get the revenge thoughts in your head.
Do you want to live for revenge for the rest of your life, short or long? Probably short, considering what you're going to be fighting.
We don't see them land. See, in the comic, that stuff happens after they land, because when they land, they find that outside the circus, everybody else has been killed.
Yeah, so everyone who didn't go into the tent fought in a huge climactic battle we didn't see, or was that not in the comic either?
It was not in the comic either. They just landed and fell.
Okay.
They were like, oh, we're going to land on those red sand dunes. And when they landed, they go, fuck, those weren't sand dunes, they were corpses.
Right.
So I think it's Dottore is the one who gets them to duel each other. And then, of course, they refuse. Well, apart from the one Shirigano.
Because she didn't have, like, a tragic backstory with a fiancé back home. She was just like, I'm just here to murder bitches, whatever. And it was like, well, she's going to be the one to turn on him, and she instantly does.
Yes.
She turns on him, your man punches her out, and then he says, okay, you two guys with the puppets go on ahead. Yeah. We'll stay behind. And your man's like, you can't do that, you have to fight to the death. He's like, fuck you.
It launches over the microphone. Yeah, because they're like in a crushing thing with spikes, and the spikes fly off. And Narumi protects everybody by taking all the spikes into his body.
Well, he initially looks like he's doing the kung fu, like, deflecting them. And he deflected a bunch, but he took most of them to the body. So, yeah.
And then she uses her drill powers to...
Which, like, he just knows she has drill powers. How does he know that? We haven't established that at all, have we?
I don't think so. To break through to the next room where it's the guy from Kenya and Commander Faceless. I think the other two Shiriganos are already knocked out. Oh, also the dog's there.
I didn't realize the dog was there until it showed the dog. I guess dogs don't count towards your number? I don't fucking know.
And then a bunch of puppets show up, and then she does have a name, because I do believe she, in theory, should be an important character going forward.
She does introduce herself, but she doesn't really have any complex backstory that she talks about anyway.
Is it Marina? I think it might just be Marina. She explains that Commander Faceless is Faceless of the three solutions. Dismantle, dissolve, and then a third secret solution that we don't learn about.
His first solution was he just took all those many puppets apart with wrenches and shit really quickly. Yeah. The second one, I'll use acid to get through the door.
And I think
his third solution was what the thing that he did in the end, which isn't a great
one. A bunch
one.
Of gears.
Yeah. It fucking worked. You can't deny him that. It stopped that giant buzzsaw thing.
Yes. The second lot of puppets they fight are pretty good. The guy is like a big pop gun.
Yeah. Is that guy, what's his name, who voices Zoro? It sounded very similar.
I didn't check. Is the other guy like a party blower?
His feet are knives, I think. But he's one of the popper things.
Yeah.
A pop gun and a pop.
I don't know what you pull those things. It's the guy from Kenya's puppet is what I'm thinking of. He's looking like a party guy because he's like that big dragon. I'm just scrolling through the timeline to remind myself what happened. Oh yeah, Xenopher is also apparently caused by, nano automata.
What?
Yeah, they're nanobots that cause you to choke when you don't laugh.
Nanomachines.
points at self. Nano machines. That explains.
Yeah, there's like a big spike roller, and so stop it. Commander Faceless climbs in and gives Narumi his pricey of his flashback.
Yeah, here's my deal, but we're not even going to fully animate it because
it's going to be a shadow play. Also, I don't know whether it's true because remember he's got the same voice as Masaru's dad.
Yeah.
I don't know whether that's just because maybe they both drank from the potion that the other alchemist had thrown his body into.
And so, I feel like that would have been the case if they had your man who voices Narumi voice your man in
true.
The past. That would make sense that there's a correlation there, but they don't do that, so who fucking knows?
No, who knows? then he's Narumi's like bleeding everywhere, and he's found by Schwartz, who helps him along, and they walk through this like room which is dedicated to how great Francine is, and then Schwartz likes, I've got to admit, I didn't actually have a fiance, I was lying, I just wanted to seem cool.
I didn't even have like technically a fiance because the girl I love married a puppet. I can't go fully into it now because we don't have time in this fucking episode.
I thought it was Faceless's woman he loved married a puppet.
Oh, did he? I'm fucking conflating the two. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, no, Schwartz's problem is that he's basically, his town was just poisoned by Francine, but he fell in love with Francine as he was choking to death.
That was it. So his fiance, inverted commas, was her, and he's decided, I need to kill her, because obviously,
yes,
you know, he's a Chiragane now, so yeah, that's what they do.
And so they get there, and Rockenfeld, and God, I can't remember his name now. Is it Tim Bakke? Tim Batty? I can't remember the guy from Kenya. And
he hasn't done anything yet, so it's really hard
to
remember.
He's extended his dragon to make a bridge. That's about it.
Yeah, I couldn't even get a good look at what his thing was. So he's got an extendable puppet, but that's all I know.
Yeah, and so now it's time for... And I think Maria's there as well. Yeah, she is.
All the main four oldest, deadliest puppets are there.
Yeah, does Lucille have the liner that they're going to go down but take a different route in this, or is that going to be in next episode?
I think the two women said that they're going to go on. They're going to sneak in ahead, and then obviously, what's her name says, like, yeah, fuck it, let's go. The old lady.
Yes.
They're all just going to bust in there, apparently.
Yeah,
they did say it in this episode. Yeah,
yeah, but they need whatever's in the helicopter with the two lads.
Hmm.
And then yes, it's the credits run, and then we get one still shot of Faceless's face bleeding from his mouth. And the reason he's called Faceless is because he was like, he always used to like to laugh, didn't he? Or something. I can't remember what the details were.
He, fucking some tragedy. He always used to take the piss to make things better.
He was like passed from foster home to foster home.
Yeah, and he kept things light to keep things happy. But his fiance was the only one who knew the real him. And the only one he'd show his real face to, and he has to. And at the end, he's like, "I got to put my sunglasses on because I talk too much when I'm not wearing my sunglasses." After explaining his entire backstory, or most of it anyway.
And
yeah.
This wasn't as bad in terms of connective tissue being missing as the previous episode, I don't think.
It's just there's so much crammed in there, man.
Yeah, it's a lot crammed in because there's two characters missing, and so they've had to lay a bunch of stuff on other characters.
It sounds absolutely kind of chaotic. I've obviously tapped out by now. It still sounds absolutely chaotic, and I couldn't help but put it side by side with the finale there of this season of Golden Kamuy, which is also kind of chaotic and things going wrong, but it feels like it's managed chaos, whereas this is just like the floodgates have just been opened, the dam is bursting, it's all flowing in on top of you, and you doing your best to stem the tide and try and figure out what the hell is happening.
Like, yeah. I feel like with Kamuy, like, you're there with the characters trying to figure out, wait, whose side is that guy on? And you're seeing everything flip, and you're there with them. So as soon as, like, Tsurumi's like, hey, Sugimoto, we're brain buddies now, and we're on the same side again, I guess. It's kind of like you're going like, okay, I can put it all together. Yeah, it's like you said, managed chaos, whereas this is just like, it feels like there's so much missing, and I don't even know what's missing because I haven't even read the wiki like
that. I think the difference between it and Kamuy. Kamuy had a firm idea of what it was trying to do.
Yeah, it knows whose sides are on what
to get there, because it's never really cut any plot points out except for that stuff which they stuck on that OVA, which I swore about in the first season. The only thing you didn't get to see really was like, how really did Ogata get to be with Hijikata?
Yeah. But that's kind of more like a fun aside thing, as you can see. Like, Ogata is like a fucking gun for hire. He'll work for whoever.
It establishes that within the show.
So you kind of know who he is, what kind of character he is by then. So it didn't seem kind of weird and strange for him to do something like that. Whereas Samer was like, oh yes, this character has been important all along. We just didn't mention it until now. We didn't acknowledge it existed until now. But now you're kind of catching up, and we've got to dump all this stuff that you should have known, like, probably ages ago.
As if you should have known it. Yeah. It's like you said, Brian. I think it's like this is nearly for people who've read the comic, because I don't need the blood thing explained to me because I read the comic.
There's people who are enjoying it who haven't read the comic. I don't know what people who read the comic would like. I think they'd be the most. I'm more annoyed about it having read some of the comic.
Like I said, it's like I feel like it's meant for the person who knows the background, but I feel like that person who likes it is not going to like this.
Yeah, I feel like it's more obvious that they've cut stuff out in this. There's episodes where it feels like they've cut stuff out in Can We, but it never damages the story. This feels like they cut stuff out, but then stuff they cut out needs to be referred to later on. And so they have to do the weird thing of, like, having these very quick asides of, like, quickly recap that person's background about being a animal trainer. Quickly explain who this Chinese woman is who's suddenly been introduced.
Like, so basically 50% of this story was the circus, and we haven't seen those motherfuckers in ages.
Oh, and what's worse, Dwayne, is it's almost halfway through the comic, and yet we're a third of the way through the anime, so I don't know why
they're going to be really slow adapting the end of it. I don't fucking know. It's weird.
13 episode epilogue.
Let me explain all the shit that we skipped.
This is why you should feel sad that all those guys died. Oh, now I get it.
Oh, now I am sad that I didn't fucking get to enjoy that as the show fucking continued. This is why that character didn't show up. He was caught in traffic. Fucking that kind of shit. Oh my god. Fucking hell.
It was summed up for me when I was like, had the episode there where we're getting the flashback from Naomi's Kung Fu Master. There was a fucking silver dog there. No one acknowledges it. No one points out or points anything to it. It's just standing there. It doesn't do anything. And then episode, by the way, this dog is super important because it's going to lead us to the bad guy.
It's actually, the dog has brought us to the final climactic battle partway through the season.
Someone said, what's going on with that dog? Why is it silver? Is it a Shirogane? And this to say, like, we obviously know it's that, but to, like, give...
For someone to go check it out, I found this Shirogane dog.
Acknowledge the ramifications of that. This process, this fucking, the Shirogane thing is kind of a plague in and of itself. It can kind of subvert a natural order like this. And then just not do any of that. Just say, oh, by the way, this dog. Yes, we need this dog. It's a key, like, plot thing we need to get to this part of the story. Come on.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's a key plot thing they've not mentioned yet.
Not fun surprise at this stage.
that line in the episode 3 about Masaru being bait has a mirror in another part of the story, which they have failed to mention at all.
Okay, cool.
Which they probably will do after this arc, because they'll do the thing they did with the Alchemist flashback, is they'll wedge the other half of Lucille's flashback at the start of Guy's flashback. Which will then take... It will remove all mystery as to who a certain character was.
Right.
But I'm also kind of hoping that after this arc, it may settle down a bit again, because there'll be a lot less characters after this arc. Spoiler alert.
Oh no, not going to know what's going on with Shirogane guy who I've just met from France or wherever it is, number 3.
Don't get attached to any of those. It's not so bad that they didn't introduce any of the other ones, because you wouldn't have had any time to get attached to them anyway.
Oh, no.
It's like, hi, I'm Guy, and this is my backstory. Blah! It's basically probably what would have happened in the same fucking scene, yeah.
Yeah, no, well, it's not quite that, but you'll see.
Oh, just the way this thing fucking chops it up, it probably would have been.
But there's a scene coming up which, I mean, if they fuck that scene up, I'm done, I think.
Okay, fair enough. I'm curious now.
And it's a scene which they shouldn't have to fuck up, because it, yeah.
God damn this fucking show, man. It started off so fucking strong.
Just thinking as well about what was in that episode. So, like, guy, when they're facing off with the puppets, there's like, it's me, I'm Zed. My whole gimmick is I got like juggling pins and they're also dynamite. You should probably know who I am. Dead immediately. Just pulling stuff like that. All the time.
Oh yeah, I mean those guys. No, those guys. I think those guys similarly die in a similar fashion in the comic.
Okay.
Right. But at this stage, it's hard to tell the fucking difference. Is I think what you're trying to say.
Yeah, exactly.
I've said that. I think they come back later. I mean, some of the stuff I know which happens later. Is the other reason why I'm curious to carry on watching is because it would make more sense from what I could tell from what little I could tell from the wiki. And also, from looking at the covers of the manga, there's a whole bunch of characters who have not been introduced yet.
That's the second half, yeah.
Yeah.
Different show now.
More guys. Behold, I've brought our allies, John and Mary and Jack and Sean. But, oh man, Sean. Wow.
Yeah, there's
Sean again.
Masaru seems to be running with an entirely different set of characters on some of the covers, so.
Like, we haven't even fucking, like I said, it seems like this is the big climactic battle.
Whereas
Shirogane, I still haven't looked at what her name is. I assume it's like Francine at this fucking stage. The regular Shirogane, that's
Eleanor.
Her name.
Eleanor,
sorry. It seems like she should be here for the big climactic battle, but I guess I don't fucking know jack shit because I have no idea how much has been chopped and that kind of thing.
Yeah, that bit, I think you'd still be asking that in the comic. As like,
okay, fair enough.
And you'd be asking even more because you've seen just how many of the other Shirogane they'd invited. And it's like, okay, why hasn't that one been invited?
Like, I'm guessing it seems better in the comic because there's so many other guys and plots to deal with that she doesn't feel left out.
I think that does get addressed when we get to the next arc, which is the finale to the circus part of the story.
Okay.
Which seems mainly to be a flashback of Geese. It has very little to do with the circus. So I think the comic has a degree of losing control as well.
Right, okay.
Again, I don't know how much of it being really long was it being super successful and it went on longer than he intended. And at the same time, I don't know how much of it ending was it ending when he wanted to, or
he had
to end because sales were dwindling. Maybe it's rushing because he's got a great new fit ending to it that he wants to put in the animation.
This is the new official ending because I had to rush that last one.
Like I said, I see people on Twitter who are enjoying it completely ignorant, and we'll get to a show in a couple of shows time, which I really enjoy this first episode, but people who are more familiar with the material, have similar problems as we have with Karakuri Circus.
Okay. I'll stick with it for now, or at least until you drop it in a rage of fucking that scene up.
I haven't watched Dororo yet. It's possible that I might just get, well, maybe I need to watch one thing on Amazon Prime.
Yeah. I mean, like, based off other things coming, it could easily get dropped, yeah.
Next up, though, it's Bono Bono, Season 3, Episode 39, Boss Bear Comes Down. More important in plot advancements in Bono Bono.
Yeah, I just say, do know Karakuri Circus.
Exactly. At the end of this, I literally out loud said, oh, that's nice. And I was like, I was very satisfied. I was like, wow. There's like a lot of build-up, and nothing happened to make it happen. It just sort of happened naturally. But it felt good.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's nice.
The wisdom of children.
Yeah,
because Boss Bear comes down from the mountain, says hello to Wolverine's dad.
I thought he'd something to do, but it was just out of boredom, it seems, why he's come down.
He kind of comes down with other forces getting on without him under the other bear stewardship. It's kind of getting on fine. They don't really give a shit.
I love talking to Wolverine's dad. Wolverine's dad is like, oh, shit, what are you doing here? Like, he, like me, assumed he was here for some great reason, and he just kind of picks up a rock, throws it as far as he can, goes and gets it, brings it back, puts it back where he left. Yes, everything's right here. You know, he's just kind of like Wolverine's dad going like, the fuck is happening?
It kind of feels a bit like he's lonely, but he doesn't know. He feels like he needs a reason to come back, and then the kids at the end kind of make him realize he doesn't need a reason. He can just come back.
It's like the thing of, again, the kind of, I don't think it's us reading into it saying like toxic masculinity, where it's like, yeah, he obviously, I need to come back for a great purpose and shit. It's like, no, you can just come back because you don't feel fucking like you need to be gone anymore. That's a good enough reason.
Well, you're saying out loud, I've been wondering about if there was reasons I had for leaving, reasons I hate pushing cast. They've been kind of fading away, and I can't actually remember why. And then when the kids come along, they kind of crystallize that feeling for him. He's like, I've been a massive fucking idiot. I'm
a dipshit. Yeah, and it's because they want to play with Baby Bear again.
Yes.
Even though they were playing with him earlier. And it's like, but you were playing him earlier. Why do you want to play with him again? Just fucking cuz.
Well, why not?
Well, fuck it.
Yeah.
And Bono, like, giving himself a stress headache over trying to come up with a reason. Yeah, it's not worth it. You give yourself a stress headache.
Just want to do it. It's okay to do that,
yeah. Yeah, it was a very sweet episode.
Also, it's nice, just the dad hanging out with the kid kind of thing. And it's nice to see Baby Bear, like, has the most amount of words with his dad.
Yes.
Like, mostly he's just imitating people or barely imitating what people are saying back to him, back to them. But he can actually, like, make statements to his dad. Like, it's like, you know, it's like, your home is this way, idiot, kind of thing. It's nice.
Just to assert himself, you know. I was explaining what was going on to Rose there. Oh, who is that? Oh, that's Boss Bear. He's a dumb, manly man who is he was an absentee father because he lost a fight. He has to exile himself from the forest because that's what fucking honorable men do. He's an idiot. He's missing out on his child growing up. And thankfully, by the end of it, he's fucking come around to what a stupid idea that was. Yeah. Be there for your kid, man. Come on.
That's the first Bonnie Bonner episode. We'll get to the second one as we go chronologically through all these cartoons. And next up, though, is a double bill. It is two episodes of Boogie Pop and Others.
Oh, shoot. We were supposed to watch both. I only watched the first one. I'm guessing I missed out on a huge amount then.
You certainly did, yes, because the first episode almost goes out of its way.
It's very cryptic.
As to, it tells you the entire story from the point of view of a character who is not involved in the story.
Yeah, he's kind of like, so you're going to defeat the big bad guy? He's like, yeah, it's already gone. And he's like, what? Yeah, and I was kind of like, wait, am I not going to fucking see anything happen in this episode? No, I should have watched the second episode. God damn it. dear.
And we can't stop talking about the second episode till next week.
If you want, yeah.
No, you can totally spoil the shit out of it. I don't mind. Okay. I'll watch it soon.
I mean, well, we probably won't, because we'll probably struggle to remember everything which happened.
if you're more comfortable with doing it next.
Well, I feel like divorced from context, you probably wouldn't be able to glean much from it anyway.
Okay, fair enough.
Like, you know, like comparatively, you get a vague sense of, like, you know, there's something kind of strange going on in episode one. And then you're getting a lot of kind of background to it. We've always seen like a lot of kind of players involved. And in episode two, you got to pay pretty close attention because you're seeing things, different events at different times. But it was not always a very clear indication of when that is. But you will know from context from this person being present here talking about something that has happened or has not happened yet. And then you'll be able to kind of put together a timeline in your head. And then you're kind of relating that back to what you saw in episode one, and then from that to be able to kind of
get the order of it. Yeah.
I quite like that. There are a lot of the complaints for that. Oh, episode two kind of tips its hand too early and it gives you too much. But, and there's so many things where, like, you don't get the emotional context for what a character does in episode two, but I think it's going to do a similar thing where it'll go back and, show you lead up to that a little bit more, similar to what you were doing here, okay? A very disjointed narrative that's going on.
We'll see. I know it's adapting more than just one novel. That's the thing.
Yeah.
With Boogie Pop, Phantom was like a sequel to the book, I believe. Like an anime-only sequel to the book. So the first episode is, what's his name? It is, Keiji Takada.
Is Joe Schmo is
Might as well be, yeah.
He's meeting up with a girl from his class for a date, even though at their school, not supposed to be dating anybody, but...
Even though everyone like, in their school is dating.
This is a bit of a rule that everyone flouts if one say it's more like a bylaw or something like that, that this doesn't... can actually enforce this. Their jurisdiction like stops at the school gate, so fuck them. but she doesn't turn up. And, but then she's a kind of scuffle emerged there at the crossing. There was like a man clearly in distress and no one's going to help him. But then a strange, cloaked and beheaded figure steps down to assist him and then lambastes the crowd for like ignoring his plight. He's like, oh, wow, what a weirdo. Then the same face as the girl I'm supposed to be meeting today. What's going on there?
Yeah.
And so, she also like flips some cops.
Yes. Yeah.
Because they're manhandling him and she's like, dude, guys, he's seriously like strung out. Like he's not going to cause any trouble.
So basically he learns from the other personality that this is Boogie Pop who, explains that they are an alternate personality of, what's her name? Tokumiya Shita. And that Boogie Pop alters her memory so that she doesn't know that she's having these blackouts that would be otherwise.
Yeah, so it's just like replaced as like, oh, I just felt ill and was in bed all day. Like an easy enough thing for her to think happened because there's no real evidence for or against it. And, except for her being out, obviously,
And there's something in the school which is not only threatening the school, but perhaps mankind itself.
Mm.
And that's why they're here to solve it. And they basically are like having friendly conversations on the roof of the school. We also get to see a few of the other characters. Is it Neko Kamikishiro? I think that's the friend of,
There's the blonde girl thinking of, is it?
Yeah. There's, Nagi Kirima, who they're like, they think she's Boogie Pop, but also the description of what Boogie Pop is going around in the school is completely different to the Boogie Pop we meet in the episode.
I think, kind of job.
Yeah, or they think that Boogie Pop is whatever this threat is?
Yes, a man-eater.
Like basically they've, convoluted the person that's like claims to be hunting this monster or whatever as the being the monster.
In the second episode,
they don't seem to have figured out that any correlation between that and the bunch of girls who have gone missing. Everyone's like, oh yeah, they've obviously run away from home. Sure, I'd run away from home if I had the fucking chance, kind of thing. And it's kind of like, but like, that seems a bit weird, guys. But it's just like an epidemic of it.
Kazuko Suima is the one who the girls are asking this about because she's got a knowledge of criminal psychology.
She's a nerd. Literally reading a book about it right now.
Doesn't put together as well that her classmate's father, Nagi, is the guy who wrote all those books. So it stands to reason then that she meets Nagi in episode 2, goes over to her house and hangs out. Oh, no wonder you're so like well versed in this investigation, Dark. Your dad literally wrote a book on it.
Mm.
But yeah, it ends with basically Boogie Pop telling Takeda that the problem's been taken care of, and then he sees his girlfriend later. Is it, she like meeting Nagi for the first time or?
Meets Nagi at school gate and phone and say, hey, it's me, Nagi. I just got off suspension. Good to meet you.
Yes.
Hmm.
Well, in the second episode, we get some of the details in between the end and the start of the story we see here.
Hmm. A lot of different, threads in which you've got. We see the actual, man-eating creature that can take on other forms, and the kind of deranged schoolboy who is working alongside it.
Not only working alongside it, dating it.
Yes. And seeing how their choosing their targets and kind of luring them in and then covering up the details. But obviously it gets harder to do that as it goes on. So they got to figure out more elaborate ways to cover their tracks.
Yeah, because they're not murdering them straight away. They're mind controlling them.
Yeah. Their first kind of victim, their first target, they, basically, they do something to her where it synthesizes a drug from her tears or from some fluids secreted from her brain. Mm. And then that girl then goes and offers that, drug then to her friends because they're all in cram school and studying for tests and friends saying, "Hey man, have some of these. It'll really help take the edge off the day of all the stress we're going through studying for exams." And then via that, then they lure them in and, the beast, which is called Manticore, because it's, why not? It's a manticore. It's some kind of play on words. As man eater sounds like manticore or something like that. I forget what it was. But as stated, now they've got to try and find a different way to cover their tracks because Nagi is kind of on the case and figured out there was some kind of link between these people and the thing that she is after. To the extent it is like. One of these girls comes in tears to forgotten her name already. Criminal psychology nerd. Yeah, and they're just like walking by there by the canal, and while she's trying to confide in her, and then Nagato comes behind her and just one fucking CQC to the ground. Okay, master, get out of there! Like, oh, stop me! I'm not a master. Get off her! Okay, you're not a master, not yet. Anyway, I'll let you out this time. This comes out of fucking nowhere. Like, what the hell? Why is she doing that to her? But you get the context for that later on. And Suima, to her credit, has figured out that, oh, you weren't trying to attack her. You thought there was something else going on.
And so then they start breaking down and they have to... the girl who we later learn has befriended the guy who was saved by Boogie Pop in the first episode... who could only repeat things said to him.
Echoes.
Yeah, she discovers them in the middle of a... Is she eating somebody?
Eating somebody.
Yeah, and they kill her, and that's when they learn that Echoes is alive, and Manticore fears Echoes because Manticore's a clone of Echoes. Clone. He's like the ultimate form of human evolution or something.
I forget, did they say, is it fucking, like, outer space alien thing, and then it got captured by the government, and they did experiments, and they made the clones, and that's where Magical came from?
That's
what they heard, anyway.
I think that's what she learns from her telepathic link with Echoes.
That was it.
But the clone thinks Echoes is something else. Manticore thinks Echoes is something else.
Right.
Then we get the flashback of her she's explained this to, Kirima, which leads Nagi Kirima to get herself suspended from school so she can do more investigating by just taking a packet of cigarettes into school and flashing it in front of a teacher.
Yeah, like she is right on your man's case. She has got him like in her sights she knows that he is fucking teamed up with Manticore and saying I'm on to you, I'm gonna bust you, but not in so many words.
Yeah, but Manticore's like, oh, maybe you want her to catch me, maybe you want to get with Nagi. So yeah, Manticore is in love with what's this punk's name? He's a real creep. Masami Satome. And so she's like having jealous feelings, thinking that Masami's into Nagi.
From what I bet this take place over this day, the one week that she was like suspended from the school somehow, and just kind of get filled in with details over time. It's like a challenging thing, like I said, you gotta pay attention to it and figure out where those jumps to different times in the narrative are happening. But it feels very satisfying when you are putting the pieces together like that.
Okay, that was going to be my question as well. Like, it doesn't seem unnecessary. Does it at least feel good when you have it figured out?
Oh, no, I really liked it. I was... It's not too difficult. I don't think it's any more complicated than first season Concrete Revolution.
Oh, but that thing is super complicated.
Yeah, but it's so graceful. If you're putting like the red string on the pinboard and like, you know, drawing those clues together.
Yeah, we're still talking about it fucking today, so that's a pretty good sign.
Yeah,
I guess.
This is going to be more closely contained as well. It's probably only going to be four or six episodes, I would guess. And then they'll do versus whatever the next one is, versus Imaginator or something.
Yeah, they've dropped that name already. I think it was on the cover of one of the books that Nagi's father wrote.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's fine. Shingo Natsumi doing it again because he also directed Akka, and that was full of misdirection and trying to find the clues.
Sure,
so
sure.
I guess a dab pen of this kind of thing.
Yeah, this definitely reminded me more of the pacing of Akka than One Punch Man. And I do wonder whether my suspicion is we won't get some of that character stuff that people are complaining they cut out, because my feeling, if the first episode's anything to go by, is that maybe that wouldn't work that well on television. Maybe that works better as prose
written. Yeah.
And so maybe you cut all that out and just get the sinew of the action.
Okay.
Honestly, this is actually the first Boogie Pop media I've ever enjoyed, because I never actually saw the original anime series.
I'm exactly the same about Niall, and I was like, I'm glad I don't have those things to compare it to, because I really enjoyed these.
Yeah.
Sure.
I knew what it was, and I know a little bit of how it works and what Boogie Pop is, but besides that, I'm a complete neophyte to the whole thing, and just maybe having that little bit of ignorance, if you want to call it that, coming into this helps you to more easily digest what's put in front of you. It's like, you know, the same old thing when you read a book and then you see the film version of the book on screen. It'll never measure up to the version you have in your head as you're reading it, because nothing could. In your head, you imagine you've got unlimited budgets, every kind of ideal actor and effect and thing you want in it. So what you see on the screen will never measure up to what you read in the book. It just is impossible to do. So you got to kind of bear that in mind when you're boarding something like this.
Okay. I'm sorry I just watched the first episode, because obviously I watched the 1/6 maybe of the story that was the most boring part that nothing really happens in.
See, I quite like...
You guys have watched like a third, and you're like, oh, this third is nice. That's probably
possibly
the right
even half.
Yeah, close. You've watched more percentages, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, from what I understand, it's like the first episode is quite faithful to the first chapter, and... Then,
it kind of keeps you on, like, what the fuck is happening here?
The second
kind
of goes through a lot of chapters. I like that first episode. I particularly like it because it's like the character who you'd expect to be the protagonist in this sort of light novel adaptation is basically
he's not important.
The end of the episode. Yeah, sorry, mate. It's not your story.
He's only seen the outside, you know, and we've seen him at the end of that, and he's done nothing at all. Nothing of any kind of tangible.
Well, he's read up about multiple personalities.
Yes.
He's talked to some people around the school.
Yes. And he always feels like he finds it easier to talk to his girlfriend's second personality than her.
Like, yeah, he's really gonna miss this other person, cause like, we could fucking talk about some shit that I was getting into. I was really interested. He barely scratched the surface of trying to talk about whatever mysteries are going on and found out nothing.
Yeah. No, I really like that, because that's that type of protagonist is like rife in these light novel type stories.
Yeah. So it's good to kind of sideline them so quick.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to watching the rest of it. I'm definitely make an appointment. Hopefully there won't be two episodes every week.
Yeah.
I'll watch two episodes every week if there is.
Well, I got one more I should watch anyway. stuff. I think it seems to be all kind of, these things seem to be our in our wheelhouse more so than anything else, because there were similar complaints level at ACA where, oh, it's too much of a slow burn, you know, and like, but we were one well into it. So I don't know, it just, I guess they're preaching to the choir in a sense.
I see a lot of that stuff
an outlier
like,
in some sense.
Yeah, a lot of the stuff at ACA at the time was like, what the fuck is this? I need to be fucking spoon-fed as I'm going along kind of thing. But, like, I see a lot more people, like, looking back on it now and goes, like, that thing was fucking class. And it's like, yes, it fucking was. When they have the whole thing to work with and they can just, like, jump straight into the next episode, there's a more immediacy for it that people are realizing that it was a pretty good show. And, yeah, maybe this thing's going to have the same problem then.
Righty-ho, next on my list is Bonobono again.
What?
Episode 40. This one is called
Everything Gets Old. Oh, man. Confronting your own mortality, huh?
Yes. Hey, which Raccoon does with glee.
Well, he doesn't give a fuck. But, no. So.
He's truly a force of entropy.
I'm a nihilist, man. You know, it doesn't all matter. We're just fucking specks on a ball of dust in the great void. It doesn't really matter what we do, man. We're just fucking dust in the wind.
And it all starts off to see, it, like, you know, getting your friend to smell this. Has this gone bad? Kind of thing. I did like Chipmunk's solution. And I was like, yeah, I kind of deserved a smack for that, I'll be honest. It's kind of a dick move.
Yes. So, basically they're asking, is there anything which doesn't get old? And Raccoon goes, yes, Turtle Rock. Haha, just kidding. Everything gets old. And then it explains what something which wasn't, for there to be something which didn't get old, it would have to be like this, and then we get a fantasy sequence of the thing he's imagined that will never get old. So he it can't break, it can't get dirty, it will never die.
You can't move it.
Yes. But that reminds Bonobono that sounds just like Kahiro Man, a ally of justice he dreamt about.
Honestly, I kind of want to watch that show as well.
Well, I think, yes. But then Chipmunk explains that, hey, if Kahiro Man never got old, and then he runs through when he was 10 years old, 20 years old, 30 years old, 50 years old, that people would say, man, that Kahiro Man really gets old, even doing the same old shit for 50 years.
Yep. You see,
he's old-fashioned. Yeah.
He can get old in a figurative sense. But we're kind of over your shtick already.
Mm-hmm.
What else have you got that's new? It's like, oh no, that's my whole thing. I haven't got anything new.
What about Wolverine's poop?
No, those are separate things that are new, but then become old. It isn't like one non-continuous stream. Thank God.
I did like him, Raccoon rebuking Bono. I was like, you weren't talking about his shit, were you? And Bono's like,
turns away.
You son of a bitch.
Shamefaced.
Dear.
But yes, then he thinks the sky. Oh no, the sky is changing colours, it's getting old.
Like, I'll just sit here and watch the sky. It never gets old. It's obviously, you know, nighttime.
Slowly breaks down with all his knees and tears. No, it got old!
The sky has betrayed me.
That explains, that's not an old sky, that's a new night.
And then, literally, it dawns on him.
Yes.
Yeah.
There's always a new day. Dads know best. The next story is, Big Sis is a great detective.
Excellent. Oh, great.
So we're going to get the detective music, I hope, yeah.
Yes.
Runs in the family. To contrast their crime solving abilities. I imagine, like, presumably it'd be Big Sister Show, who's going to be a maverick rogue cop. Nothing to lose, but everything to lose.
Talking of great detectives, as there wasn't many things to watch this week, I watched Detective Conan episode 927. Did you watch this as well, Dwayne?
I only managed to get the first half in, like, with all my stuff. I didn't even watch the second half of Boogie Bop, but I have no idea what the fuck's going on.
I haven't caught up yet, so I didn't feel right to jump.
Well, on Crunchyroll, you start on episode like 700 and something, so I just jumped straight into 927.
It is designed that way. You can just jump in whenever. So.
Well, no, now there's a magical drug that turns him back temporarily, but has specific rules? I was like, I don't know any of these other fucking characters.
To be fair,
only read like the first couple of issues of Detective Conan. Yeah. I've read nothing else.
I feel like that was all introduced this episode. Or maybe it was mentioned in a previous one. Because I was like, I think you're
one
supposed...
One of the previous hundreds of episodes. Okay, maybe.
I think you're supposed to be like, what? Why is he Shinichi at the start of this episode?
Yeah, I thought it was like a flashback or something. And it was just kept going. It's like, nope, it's not mentioning anything about a flashback. It's just keep... Oh.
Yeah.
The flashback is actually I took a drug that made me big again.
At this stage, wouldn't he have been He's being Conan Edogawa, like,
6 months.
No, that's his identity.
6 months.
6 months?
What?
How many people have died in 6 months?
He's still been vanished, been gone for, like, 6 months, and then he comes back and... No, did he have, like, a good alibi for him?
He's got a voice changing thing.
He's
constructed an alibi where it's like, I'm on holiday with his voice changing majigger.
They've gone to Kyoto on a school trip, and yes, you are supposed to be confused as to why Shinichi is here, full grown, adult sized. This is the first time Masumi Sera has seen Shinichi at this age. Because there's a running story, which has been now established, that she thinks she remembers Conan from somewhere. Because when she was the age that Conan appears to be, she met Shinichi at that age.
Oh, yeah, and he brings it up in this episode. Yeah, yeah.
So she grabs him by his head and is like, do you remember me?
Yeah, we played on the beach once.
Yes.
As little kids.
Now, Masumi Sera, it's not an issue in this. If this was your first episode, you'd learn that she's also another high school detective.
Well, her friend keeps shouting, she's a girl high school detective! Yes. And I was like, yeah, okay, I got it.
It's Sonico. That's what she does. She yells and gets people into situations.
No, I'm not complaining about her function in the story. I'm just saying that's literally what happens.
She knows Jeet Kune Do, and she was not... Then gets raised. They don't bring up that she was raised in England. But was pretending that she was raised in America. I don't know if she's still pretending if she was raised in America. But Conan figured it out.
Because it's cooler?
No, it's because... Okay, not relevant to this arc, but her mom has also taken the drug and looks like a small child.
Okay.
Also, one of her brothers is the FBI agent who's currently in disguise staying with the professor. And her other brother is the... Is it Shogi? Master character who shows up every so often, who's like the boyfriend of one of the cops.
So she's heavily involved in pretty much all levels of the plot. Okay.
Yes, she's like showed up as like one of these characters who shows up every so often at the school, and you're like, what's their mystery? Are they part of the black organization? But because of who she's related to now, it feels like, oh no, she's here for the rest of the story. Which is good, because she's a great character. She's like martial artist. She's Nancy Drew crossed with Bruce Lee. It's excellent. It's a great idea for a character. She's got this antidote which lets them turn back into their normal forms for 8 hours at a time.
I don't think they specify how long, like most of the day, but you have to take like an 8 hour break.
Yeah, 8 hours is break, yes.
So like a very strict bedtime essentially, yeah.
Yeah, so they're at this, I can't remember what it's called, they're at this place in Kyoto, and they get this story about a Tengu and like a bloody...
Bloody ceiling.
Bloody
thing,
ceiling,
yeah.
Bloody footprints. And Shinichi runs into an old friend of his mum, who she goes, "I used to change his nappies."
Yeah.
To his friends, to his school.
One of the murder victims.
Yeah, to his classmates. Which is, at this point, everything is just like water off his back. There's a great bit in the preview, I can't wait for the next episode, where he starts talking like Conan in his Shinichi body, because he's got so used to talking like Conan. he starts talking like a small child. And she's there with her, she's a famous actress, and she's there with the film crew, are all people she went to college with.
They all went to the same film school, I assume, but like one's an actor, one's a director, one's a scriptwriter, one's a composer?
Composer, yes.
I think that's all the suspects that were introduced.
And so she invites Shinichi to come over because she's got a cipher she wants him to look at. Oh, and you can bring your girlfriend. Meanwhile, Ran's getting jealous a little bit because she sees him talking with this pretty woman.
Well, it's also her friend, like, bigging it up. It's like, oh, look, your husband's talking to someone. Ooh, that's true, yes. She's giving him a room number.
So then they show up, but they've also brought Masumi and Sunoko with them as well. So the cipher's, like, there's just this white page with some characters on, and they're all, like, slightly, the spacing's weird. We don't get an explanation of the site. We don't get an explanation of anything this episode. That's what for the next episode's for. And they meet some of these friends, and they go to agree to go to dinner. They invite the kids, but the kids say, no, we better go back to our rooms. And then they hear a scream, and is it the writer's? Yeah, the writer's been
It's
murdered.
The writer, because the script is all over the floor, yeah.
He's basically got two bumps on his head. And he's been stabbed.
And like a stab wound, but it's like blacked out, obviously.
Yeah, the script is
still a bloodstain,
all over the floor. And then when they see the ceiling, there's a giant patch of blood on the ceiling and footprints leading away. And they also find like a paper leaf frond, like the Tengus have. Looks
kind
like
of, that was the same thing that showed up in the there was a paper leaf with the cipher as well.
Yes, it was attached to the cipher, and there's another cipher attached to this paper leaf.
Obviously the bloody footprints are leading away on the ceiling to the window to make it look like a Tengu did it, I guess.
then he starts having an attack and has to rush back and leaves Masumi Sera behind, and he goes back to his room, and we've seen sneaking around at the place they were visiting early, a guy in a mask, if you're a long time viewer of Detective Conan, you know exactly who it was.
I didn't know who he was,
it is one of the other high school detectives of Japan. Is it Heiji Hattori? I think that's his name.
Do they have like a union at this stage?
Pretty much. There's a great episode where there's like loads of them all in one, and the cops can barely get a word in edgeways.
Maybe Japan is like one of the lower crime rates because of all these damn teenage detectives solving all the crime.
Junior Detectives Club, yay!
it's not just teenage ones. There's elementary school ones as well. And so then he's hiding in his bed with his classmates, and
because they're all playing cards and like being boys on a school trip, basically. Well, he's like, I'm going to hide in my bed and turn into a small child.
Yes.
Come from below the bed, friend, who I have arranged for this situation.
It's terrible. Hattori is having to be hiding under that bed for hours, listening to Shinichi's mate's bullshit.
Yeah. Play cards and just be crap. Like.
And then they ask him if he kissed Ran in London, to which Heiji Tori goes, yeah, of course I did. in a Kansai Ben accent, and so he's like, yeah, that when in Rome, do as Romans do. And so then later on, the next morning, when that other guy is telling everybody that they kissed, he's doing it in the accent because who he thought
to keep up appearances,
And Rad is like mad at Shinichi for telling him this when they didn't kiss. And he explains,
I just wanted to look cool in front of the guy.
He explains it was his voice, but it wasn't him. Which is enough for Rand, and then Rand just starts staring at his lips. As if to say, maybe I do want to kiss. Or no, she's thinking, does he want to kiss me? Because it's like, and the bishop, right. It's quite well animated. I quite like the framing of that scene. Because there's some weird, it has like a slightly off-color joke in the second half, which is framed in such a way that the joke is barely there. Which is kind of how the direction, we get the rules like the fourth rule is don't flirt too much. It's like, then the detective from Kyoto shows up.
And so I'm guessing this is a long-term guy as well, because I don't have a fucking clue who this guy is.
This is the first time he's appeared on the TV series. He is a film
only character. Wow, what an appearance.
He's a film-only character who was introduced into the manga in this arc. So he'd been around for years in the film as a non-canonical character.
So now he's canonical.
Now he's canonical. He is a cop who brings his pet chipmunk to murder scenes with him.
And the chipmunk has the same, like, face. Not the same face as him, but when he gives someone a dirty look, the chipmunk is also giving someone a dirty look, which is great.
That's cute.
It's cute, but also intimidating.
Yes. And also, Vesuvi is just like, he really does have a chipmunk. She's just got this blank stare. It's like, surely this can't be...
She's like, is he allowed to bring a pet to the crime scene? That seems a bit weird. Yeah.
Could have spoiled the evidence that way.
Also, I had to check the voice actor, because the cop does kind of talk a bit like Bonobo's dad. But it's not the same guy playing him.
Okay.
Chipmunk, Bonobo, of course.
He does have quite a slow, stilted delivery. So then there's another attack, but the guy isn't murdered, but we do see a Tengu
leering at him from the ceiling.
Yes,
yeah.
Which bursts into flames when he throws his cigarette in the air.
Yeah, he throws the ashtray with the lit cigarette at it, and it bursts, and they're like, it's like some kind of movie special effect. All these guys working in movies, I wonder if that could be the curse.
Yes, so then they're going to go meet them at a restaurant, the ones who are still around. Does someone else get, I think someone else gets murdered in the meantime. The next murder is at the restaurant, isn't it? So they go to the restaurant, then there's a bunch of guys start running around in Tengu masks. This is after they've bumped into Momiji, this is where the off-color joke comes in, she's got huge boobs. You would not know it from the actual cartoon. All these characters come, it's basically Masumi and like the leery one of Shinichi's mates.
The lads being lads.
Gaping at her huge boobs, of which, yes, you would not be aware of it from actually watching the animation, because they kind of frame her from her shoulders up most of the time.
Classy, I guess. Not really, but...
I think it's like, the joke was in the comic, so we've got to put it in, but we shall take any sort of...
We're better than that.
...ogling out of it.
We won't make... Yeah, I think, what was it? Did you say that you won't make the audience complicit in it, or...?
I think that's... Yeah, that kind of feels how he's framed. Because it's kind of... There's Masumi is... They're like, oh... Because they're like... they're asking if... early on, they're asking if Shinichi's ever seen Rand's boobs.
Oh, fuck's sake, lads.
And he's like... He goes silent because, yes, he has, but as Conan, and... and they're also commenting on Masumi's lack of boobs. And then when she sees Momiji's huge rack, which we don't get to see, is it's like, what does she eat to get that way? And it's like, come on, guys. I know this is a 20-year-old comic, but we don't need 20-year-old jokes in it. And there's also, they're discussing like these things in Kyoto which are used to stop dogs urinating on it, and as they've mentioned it, that is clearly going to have to be a point in the second half as explaining something.
Why are you second up that Chekhov's fucking anti-pee stuff?
The cops get distracted from the restaurant because there's got lads running around in Tengu masks. Explanation of who Momiji is, she's a recently introduced character who believes she is supposed to marry Heiji Hattori. That's pretty much it. She's super rich and thinks she should marry him as opposed to his girlfriend, who's long established. She also has a butler who we see in this episode is suspiciously good at martial arts.
Is that suspicious though? I mean, like, we have how many martial artists in the main cast?
That's true, but he's got he's got a look to him designed to make you go, is he a member of the black organization?
He's a designed character. Yeah. That makes him more suspicious. Sure.
Yeah, he like flies onto the screen, kneeing one of these Tengu in the head, in like a kickboxing style. And meanwhile, they realize, oh, this is a distraction. One of those people is getting murdered, and they run to the restaurant. And I think it's the star of the other actor has been murdered.
Which was the guy who didn't get murdered by the Tengu, but they saw it leering over him. I'm trying to remember which member of the cast he was. Yeah. Wasn't the director, was it?
He wasn't the director, I don't think.
Yeah.
Might have been the composer.
Probably was the composer then, yeah.
Yeah, so the film they've made is a remake of their college film, but when they look at when Conan looks at the credits on the internet, they discover there's a name there which they don't recognize, and there's another name that the actress was mentioning when she was at the thing at the start.
Mm.
But that name is that guy is dead, who was mentioned at the start.
But he's been dead for 50. Yeah, sure.
Yes. So clearly somebody is taking revenge for something out of these people. And we shall find out next episode. I was surprised when it was an hour long, but I was glad I started watching it early enough that I wasn't bothered watching the entire thing.
That's what caught me, I think. I watched it too late. I was like, wait a minute, this is extra long. I don't have time for this. I literally didn't have time.
I think there's even more.
I'm curious to see how it goes, but I'm worried about watching like 900 goddamn fucking episodes of Conan.
Well, I only watched the canonical ones. I skipped the
Maybe
sometimes you have to go and like go back and watch the last few minutes of one, because sometimes there's like a lead-in bit. Which is relevant to the canon.
Mm.
Even the canon ones must be like new, about 100 or so, right?
Oh yeah, there's loads and loads.
There's hundreds, yeah. There's got to be.
Yeah, I'm trying to think doesn't look like things have moved on too much since last time I watched. The last time I watched it was like, what's the deal with Masumi Sera and the small girl who's staying at her apartment in the hotel with her? I think it's now clear that that's the mum, but I don't know how much Conan knows yet.
Right.
There's a deal where the FBI guy he'd infiltrated the black organization, and there's also a guy from the Japanese secret police who's also infiltrated the black organization, but they don't know that each one had infiltrated the black organization. And the Japanese guy thinks the FBI guy killed his partner who'd also infiltrated. And so they hate each other. Or one hates, it's like a one-way hatred.
Mm.
And that's why he's in disguise staying at the professor's house. They're also trying to find out that they've got like a bunch of clues as to, I think, the head of the black organization. There's also a new teacher, which I've not seen those episodes yet, voiced by Fumi Hirano, who also might be part of the black organization. There's still loads of black organization stuff as well. And yeah, and there's romance. I'm not sure if there's any other big plots. I think there's like another Kaito Kid one coming up. I think also this arc has got like characters from Kaiba supposed to, like the previous, one of his other previous comics, show up. I think there's also like a love rival character who I've not met yet, who I think should show up in the next episode. That may be another reason why Shinichi's decided to show up as an adult. I assume at some point in the next half of the story, he runs out of the tablets and he's got to explain how the fuck is Conan doing. I can't remember what stuff was going on I'm sure there's some stuff with the dad as well.
I was confused about Conan, like why it needs the thing of the little kid as the basis of it. I mean, like at this stage, it's synonymous with the franchise, but like, you've got so many mystery things. Do you really need like this extra thing of him disguising the fact that he is this other kid?
That's his USP.
Yeah. No one expects an 8-year-old boy to be a genius detective.
You could have introduced the high school detective as not fucking world famous high school detective. It's just like he's just a high school detective, like from the start or something like that.
No, I think it's great. I think it works fine.
Oh, fair enough. And, I mean, like, you're more familiar.
Because the kind of thing he's supposed to, they mentioned in this is not, don't do anything to draw attention to yourself. Because it's like, they don't want, because it's risky every time he, like, presents himself as being alive, essentially. Because then it makes.
Because it adds questions as to where the fuck he was gone the whole time.
Yes, because the Black Organization originally thought they'd killed him with the poison as opposed to shrinking him to a child.
Oh, dear.
Righty-ho, yeah, that's Detective Conan, or as it is on Crunchyroll, case closed. Then, what have we got? We've got...
just Kitaro, isn't it?
Yes. Episode 38, New Year's Man-Eating Fable Casher. When I saw that full title, I was like, ah, excellent. This is what, this is how you enter the new year.
Yeah, cannibalism. Happy New Year.
So, I mean, like, probably, like, the non-Zine characters in Kamui, but other than that, like, this has the highest body count of anything this week, right?
Yeah, but most
of,
yeah.
Oh, wait, Karakuri Circus. Well, there was a whole fucking, like, sand dunes of people dead. Yes. Okay.
Well, that's these people are, these people are, well,
they did die.
Causes. Some of them are less thought so, I just knocked up with somebody. I need to get rid of this evidence fast, otherwise it's my ass in a sling. But gonna call friendly crime scene cleaners.
Yeah, pretty much. Body disposal, corpse disposal unit, basically, yeah. He's got a van full of corpses, it's implied at one stage. So, it's not great.
Body disposed and you get off scot-free or your money back.
Yeah, but obviously he'll have spent it by the time.
First things first, though. New Toei logo.
Hyper-realistic Perro.
I really like. I see people say he's creepy. I really like that. Perro.
He's not fucking Dumbo creepy. He's all right.
Yeah, he's fine.
It's a cute, like, cartoon cat. It's fine.
He's rendered similarly to with him playing out some Smash Bros. Recently, the new one. He's rendered a lot, like, you know, little more kind of cartoonish characters in when you see him in the cutscenes. Rendered a lot. Said, "Oh, here's like Kirby alongside fucking Solid Snake in the cutscenes." It's like. Let's see what they've gone for here.
This involves the Kasha, who is a yokai who likes to eat corpses and mochi. And he's sick of eating mochi.
Is that just the tie into New Year's, or is that actually part of a Kasha?
Good question.
I wasn't familiar with that bit.
I did look it up.
Is he just trying to suggest that it's like mochi tastes like corpses? You shouldn't eat it. It's the silent killer. It kills so many a year.
I think like much more actually does the cashews eat mochi. I guess Linda's maybe found that detail or maybe like a concocted that detail. It didn't even work back from that. What's horrifying.
Or it could be like something like if he's coming after your corpse, you gotta throw a bit of mochi on the ground and he'll go for that or something, like, you know, one of those weird vampire rules kind of thing.
Yeah. I'm gonna guess it's very much a Mizuki.
He's fucking famous for that shit
He first appeared in the story Reverse Mochi Murder. Which looks, from the cover page, that looks like where they got it's the thing which he does at the end of the story, isn't it? That's what...
super gross as well.
Yes. Now, if only the CG for that was as good as Perro's new face.
I was kind of okay with it. Because it was just still kind of weirding me out for some reason.
But yeah, so Manda and her friends are going to get their New Year's fortunes. And they're like, oh, I bet shrines only put best luck in the fortune boxes at New Year's. Which turns out to be both a good joke and a good observation, but also incredibly important to the plot. this guy used to steal bodies from funerals and crematories, and because we'd learn later is because the tears of the relatives make the best seasoning.
The best spice. And I love what Mana's kind of coming back from the temple, and she just sees, like, fucking the cat like dragging your man's corpse.
Yes.
Down the thing, he's like, oh, Jesus, my back.
But she looks literally every other direction first before turning her head.
Is this like is this filming for something? Is there someone else involved in this? Is he helping this guy? No, he's dragging a corpse. That's what's happening right now. Yeah, trying to determine if it's a legitimate corpse dragging, I guess.
Yeah.
Before she screams.
Yeah. The problem is he's gotten old, but luckily, Nozomi Otoko has got a plan. And then we don't see what the plan is yet until we see, Rolo Cloth, leching on a poster, and then he spots.
Being a super creep.
And then he spots.
It's out there right in the street, you know. It's
like, I know, but if like, it's out there right in the street and he'd be touching himself if he fucking could.
That was my main problem watching Conan. It was I watched this first and then I watched Conan and then I've got to watch blooming Shinichi wandering around with pervert Rolo Clough's voice.
Ooh, put the starch back in that sheet. Woohoo.
And he sees, Nozomi Otoko is back in the money with a hot lady.
It's like, where do you get the money to hang out with a hot lady? Where's he getting all that dosh that he's stuffing into her cleavage?
Yeah, so he follows him.
So he kind of follows him. Yeah.
And basically, like, then it, like, ripped from the headlines of
yep.
People not reporting deaths and continuing to collect their elderly parents' pensions. But he doesn't want the body lying around his house anymore. Luckily, Nozomi Otoko has got a business plan. Just give me, is it like 3 months? Or he's 4 months?
But then like he initially says like 5 months, but he gives him like a discount. So yes. 3 months pension.
Yeah. And then Rolo Cloth flies in and so he cuts him into little strips and puts him in a plastic bag.
So water can't revive him, as he explains to the guy who needs to know none of this, but it's for the audience, I guess.
Yes, it is. And then we just like a montage of corpse recovery. And now the problem is he's bringing too many bodies and the cashier can't, he's filling him up too much.
Wow.
Yeah, he says like, I'm too fucking full, man. I've been eating too many corpses. Also, those corpses taste like ass. It's like nobody loves them or something.
Yeah. Although also as well, they're also bland. I need like the grief of the family to put a bit of flavor in these guys.
And then, so I'm going to swap my body with you, Nozomi Otoko.
Because he has eaten enough corpses to get his yokai powers back.
Yes.
So, and he is fucking, what's your man's name after Dragon Ball? He has that powers, but with like handshakes.
What?
You
mean Captain Genyu.
Genyu! Couldn't think of it. I'm Genyu Force, fuck's sake. What the hell, me? Yeah, but if he touches your hand with his current hand, he can switch bodies.
Yes, and much body switching occurs as he quickly realizes this is a terrible body he's got himself into.
Oh, it's all nasty and stinky.
Yeah.
Then he runs into Nekomasume and swaps with her body, which he finds much better, but her legs are too cold.
Yeah, she's just super grossed out. Is the
that
thing,
must
yeah.
have been a nightmare for her? I was like, oh god, yeah.
When they do the cool thing of I was going to say jumping off the helicopter. When they're jumping off the birds later, and like she breaks Nozomi Otoko's leg straight away, I was like, oh, that's nasty. But then he gets to suffer that later because fuck that guy.
Just what a shitty fucking body he is. He can't even survive like a 30-story fall without breaking a bone. Come on.
Yeah, and when he tries to dodge out of the way, he gets. Sprayed full of fucking needles, and I was just like, yeah, it's sucky that she has to go through that, but at least he'll get the fucking brunt of it later. He'll get the recovery, I suppose, is the problem.
At this point he's swapped with Kitaro, at which Kitaro's dad's like, catching has been very assertive today.
I can't watch, even though I'm an eyeball, and that's totally what I'm going to do. Dear.
And then they fight him, he runs off with some bodies,
a small child breaks into a funeral, steals the fucking coffin.
I'm taking this.
Like the cops are going to be called in Kitaro at this stage, right?
Yeah, Mana's like, they run into Mana, and he's like, oh, I'm the real Kitaro. No, that's not the real Kitaro. And she goes, what fortune did I get, Kitaro? And Kasha's like, well, they're normally good fortune, so. And then she's like, no, I never told him what fortune I got, and then punches him in the face.
It's a pretty good catch, actually, yeah.
And then he ends up pounding his dad into Mochi.
That was the most gruesome part. It's like, oh no, not Danny Highball, don't hurt him.
Yeah, he's crushing him in his hand, and you hear your one screams. Goku-like screams.
I was just hearing about Goku, like, you know, by giant Vegeta, and he's a big ape man going,
I thought he was going to switch bodies with him, because obviously you're shaking the hand if you're crushing their entire body in your hand.
I was so pleased with this bit, because this is what I've been missing out of this adaptation.
The weirdness?
Is the really weird things happening to people's bodies.
Gruesome things, yeah.
We got a bit of the start of it, yeah, sure.
But no, the idea of taking a tiny eyeball man, sticking him in some mochi, and then pounding him to death.
And then to eat the mochi, eyeball mochi. Yes. Yeah.
And then for just eyeballs fly out of the mochi, and for this is apparently reverse mochi murder.
Like, you thought you were going to murder me by turning me into mochi, I'm going to turn into mochi and murder you by suffocating you.
Luring into my trap with this ability that they two don't know that I have, because I'm a weird live all man.
It never comes up generally.
There's no rule against it.
Yeah, yeah.
And also the idea that souls are barely attached to people's bodies.
Oh yeah, they can just pick it up after. I guess the guy has currently suffocated.
Yes.
So Kitaro can't breathe right now. He's currently dead, so I can just pull his soul out with my hand.
Yeah.
And then everyone will just switch chairs back to their own body.
Yeah, and to which, this is where it goes, like, my leg really hurts.
Why am I in constant pain?
Well, then they're like, oh, well, everything's back to normal, but Kasha will surely die with that terribly old body he's got. And then we see the guy doing the pension fraud being caught by the authorities, legging it, and then he runs into the Kasha.
So presumably the Kasha is going to go to prison.
Well, no, I think he's just going to go on the run.
Okay, I kind of thought everyone was going to get their comeuppance, but yeah, he was obviously hanging out, waiting to hear about people that people want dead.
Yeah, presumably. Mm. It'd now just X-Files be a serial ending. Killer.
Yeah.
This was like the right thing to come back from the big arc.
Yeah, I felt kind of refreshed from the big arc. Mm. That is its own thing.
And the next one seems to involve, like, playing some sort of mobile game, or is it DS game?
What? It's playing some kind of dating sim.
Yeah.
I'm guessing it's just like, a human man is falling in love with a Yuki Onna, a snow woman, and we gotta get these two together or keep them apart because you're not meant to intermingle. So I'm guessing Kidro's gonna be playing a lot of dating sims on the 3DS available in shops now, get some advice on how to navigate this.
I mean, you could be training with it, or they might have trapped the spirits inside a fucking video game or something like that, because he is going like, Father, what is love? And that kind of thing. And him playing it long into the night, it seems. Seems like it could be fun.
It certainly does. Right, let's see what is coming up next week and what we can actually watch.
Let's have a look and see here.
Right, Mob Psycho 100, 2.
Of course.
I believe that is Promised Neverland. Isn't that on Crunchyroll and High Dive, I think? It's definitely just been announced on High Dive.
Yeah. It was announced for Crunchyroll, but I'm not sure of the date on it now.
Let's have a look, see what they got on it.
I may watch it on High Dive, just so I'm making use of my High Dive subscription.
What have we got here? The Price of Smiles. Look, that's like a new Tatsunoko show. See what's going on with that. Here is the fucking... this piece of shit. Not look at that.
I've got Rick and the Middle, which I don't think anyone's announced, so it's probably a kids show which won't get picked up by anybody. Rinshi Okoda-chan, which thankfully is on Crunchyroll, so I don't have to get a Funimation subscription just for that.
We got Dororo.
Dororo, yes, as well. I think that's all that was on my list of things to watch.
Yeah.
I watched the trailer for My Housemate as a Cat, or whatever it's called. It did not look very good, despite the name.
Oh, well. Well, it's probably one day to get it down to a manageable size.
Exactly. I still don't think, not necessarily sure that is a manageable size. We'll see. I'll see what.
Yeah, a bunch of things could get the chop easily.
You mean you don't want to watch the... this unlikely sequel to Handshakers?
Oh, God, no! I had to look at that directly with my eyes.
Wow, Richie Okoda chat is actually a full-length episode.
That changes things slightly.
It does.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm still going to watch it, because there's a lot of people I like working on it. But it may force something else to be cut out.
Mm.
I'm going to guess a lot of people don't... Yes, here we go. I don't need a lesson on how to draw terribly drawn naked anime girls. Grrr. What the heck did I just watch? Yeah, no more. Oh, it's 3 minutes long and a 90-minute interview. There you go. So it's not so bad.
Oh,
what hath Pop Team Epic wrought?
Oh, no. Fucking... That's the fucking short anime Doomsday Singularity.
Well, I mean, this is the thing. It's going to be 12... It's 12 episodes, 12 directors, 12 different voice actresses.
Oh, dear, oh, dear.
Yeah, I mean, good or good, because one of them's Akitaro Daiichi, one of them's Koji Morimoto.
Yoshitakahashi.
There's Osamu Kobayashi in there as well, I believe.
Kisaburo Sugi, I like him.
I get it all star cast, but like I will just get confused a bunch, I imagine.
It's just a gag. Yeah. It's just a gag strip. I do.
Yeah, yeah, that's not so bad.
I saw some of the live action stuff, and it appears to be about a woman who overreacts about people she doesn't like.
Okay.
That's everything. That's all wrapped up neat and tight. There was a recap episode of JoJo's. We'll be back here next week though with a real episode of JoJo's.
Mm.
Let's find out what it's called. It's called the Florence Bound Express Train.
Choo choo!
All aboard. And let's go JoJo. Goodbye.
Bye.
Ta-ta.